Welcome to the Vitality Radio Podcast, your source for the truth about health, wellness, and real alternatives to drugs, surgeries, and the status quo of healthcare. Here, you'll find information that empowers you to take control of your health. But it's not just about health and wellness. It's about the politics of healthcare and protecting your health freedom. Now, here's your host, Jared St. Clair.
Hello and welcome to Vitality Radio. I'm your host each and every week. My name is Jared St. Clair, and today I've got a real treat for you because one of my very most popular guests of all time, talking about one of my most popular subjects of all time, is coming back. We're going to talk about nanosilver with Keith Moeller, and I am really excited to tell you that we have just introduced the nanosilver gel in the Vitality Nutrition brand. This was developed for us by Keith, who I believe is the most qualified person in the world when it comes to nanosilver, colloidal silver, whatever you would like to call it. We explain the differences between those two during this show. We also go into some of the most common misconceptions about silver and answer a lot of questions that you may have about those. We talk about the safety profile of silver. We talk about the effectiveness on the variety of different things that you can utilize silver for, both internally, externally, and as a nasal wash. If you listen to the first episode with Keith, there will be a little bit of common information here repeated, but for the most part, this should be new information for you, especially when we get into using silver gel as a topical and all the variety of things that it can be used for. And the exciting new advancements that are potentially coming around the corner if our dear friends at FDA approve them in terms of what we'll be able to say about the gel and take the muzzle off just a little bit about what we can legally say about this phenomenal product. So that's what we're talking about today. I can't wait for you to hear it. And with that, I'd like to welcome my guest, Keith Moeller. Keith, you were on maybe 6 months ago, and I was telling you before we started recording that I have had as many positive comments about your episode as I have about any episode I've ever done. And I think it's not just the fact that you're a really, really nice guy. It's not just that. But that you were talking in such a intelligent and well-researched way about a product that gets a ton of flack and, dare I say, misinformation, that sort of thing wrapped around it. And that is, I'm going to use the word colloidal silver because that's sort of the general category and what it's known as. But of course, you developed for us at Vitality Nutrition the nano silver that we have in a nasal wash as well as a liquid. And now, just in the last 2 weeks, have introduced it as a gel that is used topically. And the reason I went with you is because you simply had answers to all the questions I had. And you were the only one in the industry that I could find that could really answer those questions. And I think that's why people love that show so much. So today, I want to go into some of these myths and misunderstandings, dig a little deeper into that in a little bit different way, and then we're going to talk a lot about what we can do with nanosilver and both topically and internally. So with that giant lead-in, thank you so much for joining me again on Vitality Radio.
Jared, it's always a pleasure to be with you. I love doing it, and I love talking about it, and I don't mind going over any questions that anybody has. And if I don't know, I'll just say I don't know. It almost never happens, but I don't make up stuff, and if I tell you an answer, I can hand you the report that goes with that answer. So for me, it's really fun, and I love being on your show, and happy to be here.
Well, I'm certainly happy to have you back, and this certainly won't be the last time. And you know, it's funny, I'm in the same boat. I think you and I have similar philosophy there. I know a lot of stuff about, you know, health and nutrition and natural products. That is my wheelhouse, and I consider myself to be very educated. But there are plenty of things I don't know in that category, and if I don't, I'm always happy to tell somebody, I don't know the answer to that one, but you know, let me look into it and I'll get back to you. And that's another thing I really appreciate about you is that you are not you know, not only do you have the information, you're willing to admit when you don't have the information, and you are also willing to show us exactly where you got the information from. So lots of transparency, which I appreciate. So let me do lead into this interview, Keith, with something that I wrote. I wanted to be very specific about this. So I wrote this before the show, because what I don't want to do today is throw anybody undeserving under the bus. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So what I wrote was, we have a wide range of influencers and experts in the field of nutrition and wellness. In most cases, I tend to agree with a high percentage of their content. We may disagree on, you know, maybe potencies of certain things, or a brand preference, or even, you know, how to recommend using certain things. But generally speaking, we are on the same page in terms of trying to help you as a consumer to do a better job of utilizing natural products, supplements, you know, things to avoid, things to use, that kind of thing. And I think most of these influencers are, you know, high integrity people that are very well meaning. Unfortunately, sometimes marketing gets in the way of the truth. Slander, I'll say, in some cases, and oftentimes coming from government sources or mass media sources, will seep in and kind of muddy the field where authentic information is a little bit hard to decipher. And perhaps that's never been more the case than it has been with silver. Silver has been so maligned over the years. I've been selling natural products for most of my life, you know, literally over 40 years now. And I don't think I've ever seen anything come along that has had more, that has received more grief, we'll say, than has silver from, you know, the powers that be and government and, you know, CDC and FDA and places like that, as well as just people that are throwing it under the bus for whatever other motivations they may have. I read from an influencer, and I'm not going to give the name of this influencer because I'm not interested in trashing anybody. And frankly, almost everything that's posted on this account on Instagram is great stuff. But I do want to use some questions that she poses, Keith, and I want to throw them directly at you and just get your response to some of her concerns about silver. So the first thing she says is that silver is often touted, and she says specifically colloidal silver, as a versatile remedy in the holistic community. Some recommend ingesting it, some use it topically, some use nebulize it, and some use it as a nasal rinse. Colloidal silver is effective as an antimicrobial, she says, but long-term use of it has never been proven safe, and anything that says otherwise is a marketing ploy. What's your response to that?
It's a pretty easy, there's a whole lot of data, but let's talk a little bit about it, right? When you talk about ionic forms of silver not being safe, really, they are really safe. The only problem with ionic forms of silver is that they're not very effective. There's a big study out, and I think you and I had talked about it before, out of the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. I believe it was like November of 2013. There was about 20 docs on there, and they tested a whole bunch of colloidal silver products, a number of them, to see if they functioned and to dispel some of the myths. And what they found was ionic forms of colloidal silver would kill bacteria, but had no ability to eliminate a yeast or a virus. And so that's all published data. It's readily available. I can send you copies. The other interesting thing that they said in there, though, and that they showed, was that ionic forms of silver could start killing probiotic bacteria at about 2.5 ppm. And we're talking about lactobacillus and some of those things. The interesting part of that study was that it also says that the form of silver you're using is very important. And it quotes that phrase like three times in the study. They said that nanosilver reportedly could eliminate virus and could also eliminate yeast and fungus, right? We have hard data on all those things. There's no question about what they said was correct as far as I'm concerned. The safety factor, though, of small amounts of ionic silver is an easy thing to answer. So if we look at the government agencies that exist, they're the ones in charge of toxicity in the U.S., and that would be the U.S. EPA. Mm-hmm. The U.S. EPA put out a document called the RED document, Registration Eligibility Document for Silver. Now, it wasn't any type of silver. It just included all types of silver. And what it is a document that governs the amount of silver you could safely ingest every day for your entire life, right? Now, you have to assume that the EPA is going to be very conservative about their numbers. But on the second page, fourth paragraph, it states that you can safely consume 0.005 milligrams per kilogram a day of silver of any type. Now, if I translate that into English, what that actually means is that a normal size adult could safely drink about an ounce of a 10 ppm nanosilver or any type of silver, actually, colloidal silver, every day for their entire life and have that be deemed completely safe. In fact, third page, second paragraph, it says it's neither an eye or skin irritant, not a skin sensitizer. Fourth page, fourth paragraph, states the EPA does not anticipate that dietary exposure to these low levels of silver will be associated with any significant degree of risk. So ionic forms of silver, if we conclude out of those two big scientific write-ups, what we conclude is, one, they're safe. If you're drinking about an ounce a day, you're good. You're in no damage to any part of your body. And if you are using it every day for years, yeah, you're fine. That's the amount they deem completely safe. Now, there are other tests that we have done and other tests that are peer-reviewed and published. The one we really want to talk about at this point is the one from the University of Utah on nanosilver, specifically this technology of nanosilver. So what happened was that a group that I was associated with went to the University of Utah, and they had five different scientific, basically drug divisions of the University of Utah, by human consumption, drink an ounce of the silver every day, the silver liquid. So 10 ppm and 32 ppm, both levels. Now, in that study, they gave them an ounce every single day, and they checked every system in their body. And what they found in that study was that this nanosilver, made it into the body by ingestion, would hit its height in the bloodstream within 2 hours, and wash out completely in 24 with no residual. So it actually couldn't build up at all. And before they would actually do that study, they said to my group, they said, hey, before our IND board will accept this and allow us to do this study, we have to test somebody in your group that's used silver for a long time. So they all pointed at me, and I'd been using maybe 20 to 30 ounces a week for about probably 15 years at that point. So they took me in, they did a number of tests, but the big one was they put me in a full body MRI. I was in that stupid machine for 2 hours. I fit in that machine like a bullet in a gun. And I have some claustrophobia, so it was driving me crazy. And when it got out of that, they said, well, we've come to the conclusion that you have no silver in your body. You have no problem with silver at all. They said you might die of a lot of things. Silver won't be one of them. And I'd stopped taking it about 3 days before I went in. They said you have no buildup anywhere, and they went from the top of my head to the bottom of my tootsies. So they did the study, and they found out that this nanotechnology at an ounce a day of either a 10 or a 32 had no negative impact on any system of the body. They even said we need to check the lungs. So they took a big long swab, stuck it down these poor guys' throats. They were paid to do it, right? That study at the time, I think, cost that group about $350,000 to prove that the silver doesn't do anything. So it wasn't a use one. It was just a safety study, right? But And they tried really hard to prove that we are toxic in some way, shape, or form. The great part about that, and to their credit, in the end, they fessed up that we had no negative action in any system of the body. Enzyme levels, organs, heart, lung, livers, kidneys, and that it went in and was excreted completely in about 24 hours. So it went in and went out with no residual. It can't build up if it's not metabolized, and it showed that it was not metabolized.
Okay, so then that brings a lot of questions up, and I had never heard the story about you and the MRI. That's fascinating and sounds awful.
it was brutal.
Yeah, I've had one MRI in my life, and I think it was 10 minutes or something like that. I can't imagine a couple hours. But back to the silver thing. This is important because if I will link to the first show that I did with Keith, so you can listen to a more detailed description of the nano silver itself. But for people listening that are a little confused still, let's define some things. Ionic versus colloidal versus nano. Can you explain that?
Sure. Ionic forms of silver are actually a chemical form. They function because they're a single silver ion. Every single one of these silver ions is missing an electron. That means it has a plus one charge. And that's how it functions. So when this ion comes in contact with like a bacteria, it can rip out one single electron, and then it's happy. It's done. It can't be recharged. It's done. It's happy in its state. So if you're talking about ionic silver and you're talking about bacteria, you have to have a lot of ionic silver to make it function. Let me give you an example. There's a product that a lot of people know of. It's on the market. It's called Silvadine, number one burn cream on the market. Been out there for, I don't know, 50 years. Silvadine has 10,000 parts per million silver, 10,000. So for an FDA study we were doing, for an approval that we're after, we did a study against Silvadine, direct competition, 32 ppm gel versus 10,000 ppm Silvadine. What happened in that study was it took more than 5 hours for Silvadine to wipe out the bacteria. In this case, it was a multi-drug resistant hospital strain called MRSA, right? Took them more than 5 hours to eliminate that bacteria. The gel in that test for the FDA eliminated all of that bacteria at the first time slot, which was 30 minutes. So a nano silver at 32 ppm was actually about 10 times faster at eliminating that bug than a product that had 300 times more of the active ingredient. So ionic silver works, it's just not very effective. In low levels, it's safe, but again, it's just not very effective. The nano silver in that study, and by the way, that study was overseen by the FDA, so there is no question that the FDA knows specifically that this technology, nano silver, is safe for human ingestion.
Yeah, and so to be clear too, then, so ionic silver is typically not marketed as ionic silver; it's marketed as colloidal silver. But you're saying that ionic silver isn't colloidal silver. Is that accurate?
In truth, the answer is you're exactly correct. So what's called colloidal silver? About 90, and I believe the person you were talking about was right. But about 90% or better, maybe 98% of the products called colloidal silver on the market are just ionic forms of silver. Some of them call them silver hydrosols, which actually hydro means water, sol means particle. So it means particle in water. It doesn't actually mean anything. But the answer is that ionic silver won't hurt you, not very effective. Almost everything that's called colloidal silver on the market is ionic forms of silver. And they're easy to make. They just mix different types of chemical forms of silver. A lot of times you'll see them bound to a protein because ionic forms of silver aren't very stable. And so what they'll do is they'll bind it to a protein. The protein mucks up their ability to function. And so they have to add more silver in. And so a lot of those are 500 to 1,000, sometimes 250 ppm, parts per million. And it's because they have to add more because they mucked up its ability to function by binding it to a protein. And they say, oh no, it's much better because it has a lot more silver in it. The answer is a lot less effective. And so you have to have a lot more to even get a minor reaction, right? But the nano silver is incredibly safe, highly effective. I have one study on nano silver that came out of Romania that actually is a summary of 430 studies that are all peer-reviewed and published all on nano silver. So if you want a little light reading for your weekend, one day I'll send that over to you. But it covers five main areas. And those areas would stun you. It's like the most studied scientific thing I've ever seen, nano silver. Tons of published data, and it's all good.
Yeah, and so then let's go back to this influencer then and her concerns about silver. She again, uses the word colloidal silver, and then she does say specifically that she saw one study that analyzed 14 top colloidal silver brands. 10 were found to be ionic silver, not colloidal silver. So when she says colloidal silver, she's probably making a legitimate effort to point out that not all silver is created equal, and some of the silver isn't what it's being marketed to be. But I never want anybody to think that that any natural product that could potentially help them won't help them because not all of the versions of it on the market are good. I think with the problem I have with this post from this influencer is that she's essentially throwing all silver under the bus, where first, even the less high quality silvers, we'll say, are still very safe. But second, there are really great silvers, the nano silver in particular, that is not only very, very safe, but also really effective. And what I hate to see is people read something like this and say, well, you know, I'm not going to use silver. That stuff's dangerous. And that's why I wanted to have you on to talk about this, is to dispel some of these myths. So she says a couple of other things that I think are interesting. She talks about silver being a metal, and that the natural community is against metals generally, that there's an argument in the pharmaceutical industry that aluminum that's found in vaccines is excreted in the body in 24 hours, but then that they found that that's not true, that that's just an argument that's being made that isn't backed up by the science. But then she says, but the same argument is used for colloidal silver. But we've just discussed how colloidal silver, well, I should say nano silver, is excreted fully from the body in 24 hours. Her concern is that maybe some is sticking behind and potentially staying in the brain and causing damage that mercury and aluminum are known for, that maybe that's happening. Well, she says it probably is happening with silver. What's your take on that?
Well, obviously, my brain might not be functioning at a very high level, but I do have a little bit of data for her. So I had a doctor come up to me and he said, look, I'll use silver externally, but I won't use it internally. He said, because it's a heavy metal. And I said, it's not a heavy metal. He said, no, it's a heavy metal. I said, it's heavy and it's a metal, but it's not a heavy metal. He said, no, it's a heavy metal. I said, look, we can keep arguing about this or we can get a referee. He said, who do you suggest? I said, not who, but what? And he said, okay, what do you suggest? I said, the Merck Manual, M-E-R-C-K. It's like the Bible of science and technology. Every drug is in there. Every metal's in there. Every chemical reaction basically is in there. It's thousands of pages. And he looked at me and he said, okay. He said, I agree. That will work. I said, great. You just lost. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, if you go to the 17th edition, page 1880, second paragraph, table 226-1, it will give you a list of all the heavy metals. I said, interesting enough, that includes things like copper and gold and iron, bismuth, pepto-bismol, heavy metal. I said, the interesting part is that silver is not in there. It's not a heavy metal. And I said, if you want to go to the latest version, the 18th edition of the Bible of Science, right, Merck Manual, I said, page 2022, second paragraph. I said, it is a metal, it is heavy, but heavy metals are defined in this case as those that cause nephrotoxicity. Now, nephrotoxicity means that it's toxic to the kidneys. And silver is actually not toxic to the kidneys. So it is not listed as a heavy metal for nephrotoxicity, which is what they're talking about. And obviously, as far as the brain's concerned, they checked mine after more than, what, a decade and a half of usage, and I had none. It also goes back to that study we talked about, where if it's not metabolized and it's excreted within 24 hours with no measurable residual, then you don't have to worry about it. It can't build up.
All right, the last thing that she brings up, Keith, that I think is interesting, I think it's a valid concern because if we have a misunderstanding about how silver works in the body, then this could be a concern. But she says, as well, silver ingestion will deplete copper, which is needed for iron regulation. We have a huge problem with iron dysregulation in our country, where the iron isn't able to be utilized in the body. As well, copper is important for nervous system function and energy balance. Most importantly, you need a balance of minerals, and silver is not needed by the body at all. And of course, iron and copper are nutrients that the body utilizes and that are important for various functions, which then also goes to the fact that it's just because something is a metal doesn't mean it isn't useful. Some are, some aren't. But the key for me is this: if silver was metabolized, and if you were breaking down all this any kind of silver, but especially this nano silver, breaking it down, and it was ending up in the tissues of your body, then yes, there would be the concern for potential buildup and potential imbalance and things like that. But the fact that it is just moving through the body, working as it goes, and never actually metabolizing into the cell, that's the biggest, most important aspect of it, and really what makes it so incredibly safe to use nano silver. All right, we had a couple of technical difficulties. For some reason, our connection wasn't stable, and we lost Keith a couple times. So Jessica will do the best editing she can to make this flow, but that's what's going on if it sounds a little bit choppy for you. But I have Keith back 2 days later, actually. Let's see if we can get this thing settled. And I think the best thing I'd like to do before we move on to silver gel is to just wrap that up by saying that there is a ton of information out there about silver. And unfortunately, because A, not all silver is created equal, as we've discussed in detail here, nano silver being quite a different animal than ionic silver, that a lot of what you read about silver doesn't even apply to nano silver at all. And then I would say that even ionic silver, unless it's done pretty poorly, is still a pretty darn safe compound. It's just been so maligned over the years. And as much as possible for me on Vitality Radio, speaking to you listening, I would love to change that and get as much really good, useful, scientifically based data out on silver as we can, which of course is why I brought Keith back to the show. So Keith, let's talk about topical nano silver. And first off, we have an internal nano silver Vitality that you're manufacturing for us. It's a 10 part per million. We talked about how there's tons of great research on 10 parts per million internal, but the topical gel is a 32 part per million. So let's talk a little bit about that. Why do you think a 32 part when it comes to a topical gel might make more sense than a 10 part?
We did a lot of science, and as we went through it, we looked at some really nasty versions of yeast and fungus, and there were a whole lot of those things.
That can be problematic, besides the fact that we believe there's going to be more stuff coming down the pipe that will probably be much worse. And so we had done a great deal of work on a 32 ppm. We have mass amounts of data. We decided that since it was proven safe, right, the human ingestion studies that were completed, and so since we didn't know what was coming down the pipe and we knew that the outside use would become very important, and some of the places that the gel is utilized will dilute it quite a bit. We're looking at device insertion sites and places like that, right? And so because it's diluted, we went with the 32. And we have filed that in a number of countries. Now, if we talk about Canada, Canada has already approved that product for basically all the OTC things you could have: cuts, burns, wounds, sunburn, even skin infections and skin affections. So we have direct claims on those on an international basis, right? Specifically in Canada and all the places that will accept their approvals. But that would give us, like we said, direct claims on treating sunburn, but also skin affections include things like acne and eczema and those things. Those are specifically not claims we make at this point in the U.S. We have been working to get full FDA clearance on that product. We have not got it yet, but that will give us all of those same claims and more. Basically, what we're after in the U.S. is any wound that you could have on your body, any place, and with full antimicrobial claims, including direct claims against stuff like MRSA, the methicillin-resistant staph that kills thousands of people a year. But we've already finished all the testing. We have all that data. In the U.S. at this moment, and you and I will deal with that if we can pull off that approval, then mm-hmm. you and I will have some really fun conversations around those bugs. But until then, in the U.S., the claim that we make is that we help promote natural healing. That is absolutely true. This product is a perfect product for summer, for families, for the ability to travel, the all the things that happen to your kids. And the natural healing ability of that gel is stunning. So I think that it's a product that I have everywhere in my house. After I brush my teeth with the silver toothpaste, I actually put some of that gel on my toothpaste or on my toothbrush. And I brush any areas that might be a little sore, and I get a natural healing ability in my mouth. So if you're using some other toothpaste, then the fact is that you really probably want to do that. Has no bad taste, has no toxicity. There's actually ingested and injected studies up to 5,000 milligrams per kilogram. The other important part of that gel, and the reason why I use it every day, and I have it in my truck and in my bathroom and everywhere else, is because as I travel, we did some studies which showed if you put it on your skin, one, it would make your skin intensely soft. And two, it could give you a layer of protection that could last for hours and hours and hours on the skin. And so you can go to the store, you can touch stuff. And I think what that layer of protection is just a really good thing. I have moms who will gel their whole kid before they send them to school, just to give them that first line of defense. And I think when you look at the first line of defense for a family, it is probably one of the best two products on the planet. Because if we have a problem, and this is the other preparedness side of me coming in, right? The gel is good for about 3.5 years. I think we put expiration on it for about 3 years. I have data showing it's still effective at like 4.5. But the point of that is that to have it in your house at any time with the liquid is a major thing. Everybody needs their own first line defense. Last time we had a big problem, all of a sudden you couldn't get what you needed at the store. You couldn't get it at the pharmacy. And most people were stuck in their house with nothing, hoping that something bad didn't happen, right?
Right.
And with some of the data that you and I have talked about, the fact is if you have a few of these things in there and you know how to use them, and the free book is out there, right? There's a free book that's on silveruseinstitute.com. You can't buy any product from there. It doesn't talk about any names in it. What it does is it gives people information on how they could use the products to solve a lot of their daily problems. And it's at the silveruseinstitute.com. It's free. It costs nothing. There's a study that I did personally, and one of my sons, who's also a PhD, with Texas Tech School of Medicine. And one of the funny parts was that somebody said to me, why in the world would you work with a major med school, Texas Tech, and publish information on silver? I said, wrong question. I said, the right question for you to ask is, why in the world would a major med school in the U.S. actually come to me and ask me to do some work with them and to publish data on this, on things like biofilms and resistant bacteria? And there's a number of publications that have been done. And he said, so what's the answer? And I said, because it works. And these scientists, they want to be able to dig in and do testing and know that what they're doing is valuable and can help people all over the world. And so there are a lot of bugs that become very problematic because antibiotics and stuff can't get to them because of these biofilms. And we won't go into what those say, but what we will say is if you want data on biofilms and those types of things, readily available on this technology directly and on the gel at 32 ppm.
Awesome. So that's a lot of information. I want to dig into a couple of things that you said. And let's start kind of back at the beginning a little bit and talk about the approval process of this. So you said that the 32 part per million gel is approved in Canada for all of those things, you know, cuts and burns and things like that. But then also MRSA, M-R-S-A is the, you know, the short name for that one. And I think that's really important to understand for people that are consumers. It gets a little confusing in terms of what is and what isn't, you know, regulated in terms of a claim or a health claim or something like that. Generally speaking, products that are considered supplements, which is, you know, most of the stuff that I talk about here on Vitality Radio Podcast, are regulated as food supplements as opposed to drugs. And therefore, the claims that can be made are what are called structure function claims. They're very basic claims, like the claim that we're making on the silver gel, that it can assist the body's, you know, healing process, essentially. But we know that the data, if you have the data enough when it comes to the gel, which there is enough data, that government agencies will approve for much stronger claims. And that has happened in Canada, but you're working on it in the U.S. And you believe that at some point it will be approved here as well?
Yeah, we believe that we have enough data that we think the FDA will accept that data. So in the U.S., the FDA doesn't, even after you get cleared, they don't talk about wound healing. Canada does. And so in the countries where we have those claims, you know, we can make those claims. And in the U.S., we will continue to work hard to get those so that when you and I have these conversations, we can have a lot more fun conversations about specific problems.
Right.
But even without that, I think if people understand the ability of this gel to help promote natural healing. It's a big deal. And in the US, the types of things that we're after are both prescription and OTC claims. So those would be major med hospital claims and also over-the-counter claims. So if we can pull that off, we'll put out a direct version of that for, you know, summer use with claims on it. And it'll be fun. But fact is that the product is phenomenal. Has no color, no smell, very little taste. It's easy to use. And women especially love it because you put it a little on like a lotion and it makes your skin intensely soft. And then you have that layer of protection. A lot of guys use it, like if they shave their head or they shave their face. They can put a little on and it helps remove all the razor burn. I think one of the claims we can make in the U.S. is that it helps eliminate odor-causing bacteria. So if you have a kid playing baseball or at the moment basketball, and they walk in, peel their shoes off, and your eyes roll back in your head, and the hair in your nose curls, all you have to do is just gel them up. Make them take their socks off and then their shoes, put those outside. Maybe you spray a little of the 10 ppm in there, but all you have to do is have them gel up. Wait a few minutes and you can let them back in the house. They're good. You're good to go. And so there are some really big things. So I keep that gel everywhere. I have it on my desk. I have it in my car. It's a first line of defense for me. Anything that happens to my skin, first thing is I gel it up, right? And my family, we are the big fat Greek wedding family, but we don't use Windex. We use the silver. So the first thing when something happens, you look at them and go, well, did you put silver on that? And they look at you and say, well, obviously we did.
Keith, I got to interrupt you there because you'll love this story. So I've got my Vitality Radio listeners community. There's about 550 people in there. And somebody asked a question about something. I don't even remember what the question was about, but it was a topical thing, some sort of a skin infection or affection. And so somebody asked a question. Another one of my listeners answered the question, and she said, if I know Jared, he'll say silver. And that's exactly what I do sound like a broken record sometimes when it comes to this, but there's so much evidence, so much proof, and so much anecdotal evidence in terms of just what people tell me, has done for them, that it's a silly thing not to use as a first line of defense because the safety profile is so high and the range of potential effective uses is so wide. So I absolutely love this stuff. And I tell people, you know, I actually have done shows called, your natural medicine cabinet. I'm actually going to do a summer show here in the next little bit where I talk about, what you want on hand as kind of your summertime first aid kit. And 100% of the time, the first thing that I'll have there is the silver gel and the nasal wash, because there's so many reasons why both of those make sense, like right now as first line of defense things. And let's talk about this MRSA thing and the VRE thing that's interesting. We have approvals up in Canada showing that they work on that. Canada's not going to approve it if there isn't extremely compelling evidence that they do. But these are specifically antibiotic-resistant infections that we're talking about, and not mild ones. These are things that kill people, as you said, with MRSA up to 100,000 people a year. Because they're resisting things like amoxicillin and Augmentin and stronger antibiotics, and yet silver seems to be able to get through and do the job on these things. I don't think we can overlook that or underappreciate just how powerful silver appears to be in these studies and how it can be a really, really good answer to preventing, I think, more and more of these antibiotic-resistant infections from coming along, these superbugs that we talk about. Silver, to me, makes such good sense as something that can be used instead of some of these other medicines. And of course, this isn't medical advice that we're providing here. Neither one of us are interested in being your doctor. At least I speak for myself. I'm pretty sure you feel the same way, Keith. But this information is the kind of information that people need to have out there. And before you reach for that antibacterial wipe at your grocery store to wipe down the cart, if you are concerned about those bugs, silver gel on the hands, a drop will do it. And, you know, take care, do that if you want to put it on your kids' hands, that kind of thing. So much better than the Purell or any of these other options. So I just wanted to make sure we got into that a little bit. And talk about that.
Well, and what we're saying, we're not saying in the U.S., we say that it helps promote natural healing. Mm-hmm. We do not talk about specific antimicrobial data. But if you want backup data, as it's called, if you want it, you have the right to ask for it. And on an individual basis, you can get any of the data you want. Do we have data? We have a lot of data. Will we talk exactly about that? We will not on this one. Canada didn't approve it for specific bugs. They just approved it as a general antimicrobial, which incorporates all of those bugs at once. Okay. And so the fact that they don't list them all separately, they just gave us broad spectrum antimicrobial clearance, and we actually have it on like three or four products up there right now where we can make direct claims, right? And so if you're talking specifically about Canada for the listeners you may have up there, yes, we could discuss that Canadian stuff. In the U.S., that's called background data. It's all readily available. All you have to do is request it. In the U.S., the ones that are acceptable to most of the science groups, including the government, would be what's called the USP51. That's a preservative test, and it would go against all the general stuff. So like yeast and fungus. Yeast would be like Candida. Candida causes a whole lot of problems. Thrush, vaginal yeast infections, all those stuff. So the tests in the U.S. for the government and other ones include like Candida, Pseudomonas, which is a burn bug, E. coli, which is like a food poisoning and a problem that gets in your bladder and so forth. It would include Staph aureus, which is, you know, the mother to the resistant strain MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. So all of those general bugs, both gram-negative and gram-positive, the two different types of bacteria, are in that test. If anybody wants that data, they have right to it. All they have to do is ask. So we don't talk about specifics on a open forum like this, but if somebody wants data, they have the right to it. It's called background data. And all they have to do is ask, and we can provide that data. But if, in fact, we get the FDA clearance in the U.S., and by the way, we're after it in a whole bunch of other countries as well. We've been working on it in Europe and a bunch of other places. So it looks like the gel has started to go crazy in Europe, which we love. People just try it. And if you try it, you know that it works. If your kid is scraped up and you gel it up and all of a sudden he, you know, has no discomfort, and he heals up really quick, you know that you have something that can help naturally heal that. I love to go up to Alaska and fish. And what happens with that is you get all these little cuts on the end of your fingers. Because of the salmon and the halibut, they just scratch them. And because of the bugs in the ocean, you get really heinous pain. And little teeny scratches, but they really cause pain. We found that if we gel them up overnight, it was all gone. The natural healing effect was just phenomenal. So I have guys all over up in Alaska that use it for all sorts of stuff. I have a nurse up there that pulls it in and sews like parts back on people using that gel and just reports back that the ability that it helps naturally heal is stunning, and it really is.
Well, and you know, you brought something to my attention. I say this all the time. I love doing this show because I always learn something. I had never thought of it, and it makes perfect sense, but I never thought of it as a quote-unquote natural deodorant, you know, to rub on the stinky spots, so to speak, with your kids. I've got an almost 12-year-old who never listens to this show, so I can throw him under the bus. Almost 12-year-old boys stink, right? And anybody who's been a parent of one or has been one themselves or a sibling of one knows this to be true. So yes, silver gel. We'll be testing that theory out here real soon. I think that's a great, great idea. So I do have one other question, and then I've got to let you go because we are running out of time. It makes sense to me why silver makes sense because of the antimicrobial benefits for all of these types of things that you're talking about, everything from acne to yeast infections and cuts and scrapes and all of these kind of things. I love the idea of it as like an aftershave gel. It's another thing I haven't done. I do shave my head. I've never used silver gel for that. So next time I do that, which I think will be tomorrow, we'll give that one a shot. But I don't quite understand on that point, burns. Why does silver seem to work so well on burns? Because it's not technically an infection unless you get to, you know, a third degree or something like that. What is it that makes silver so cooling and soothing and healing when it comes to burned skin versus an infection?
Okay, so usually on a burn, whatever is happening, even a sunburn, you're continuing, the skin is hot, it's damaged, it's continuing to burn. It's hot, it produces heat. The silver is actually the number one metal for heat conductivity. So thermal and electrical energy. That's why it's used in all these big, really expensive batteries that they're using in cars. That's why it's used in solar panels. That's why it's used in so many of these things. It's a number one conductor of both thermal and electrical energy. So first thing it does when you put it on, it cools, it soothes, it pulls that heat out. Second of all, what we found in the clinical trials is that it has the ability to help the body regenerate new tissue. And so if you look at the test that's done, what we end up with is heal rates of about half the normal time. And that's pretty much across the board. Let me give you an example. So in Canada, we talked about the fact we have these approvals, right? As an antimicrobial and as a wound healing agent. And they actually use healing up there. But I just got a report. And in that report was a 17-year summary of 50,000 dental procedures, where these dentists up there have been doing human clinical trials under all the right regulations and so forth, and have done more than 50,000 dental procedures. They use that gel in almost every single procedure. And the report that I just got back from them, and because it's Canada, we'll talk about that report just a little, but over that 50,000 procedures, they have never had a single secondary infection. So that is a prevention mode, right? And that's a pretty cool thing. If you can say that, especially in the mouth where it's really dirty, there's a lot of bacteria because of water, eating, breathing. Mm-hmm. It's one of the hardest places to keep clean. And if you can do surgical incision sites and grafted sites and donor sites and all sorts of stuff like that, bone grafts, which they're doing, and have heal rates of half the normal time and almost no pain. So we did a show on PBS for dental implants, medical innovation show with this group out of Canada, specifically, you know, for that market. And the amazing part was this producer, they yanked 13 teeth in one day, and they put in 13 screws for the implants the same day.
Wow.
Day two, no squirrel cheeks and no pain. So it was stunning because if you have that type of stuff, your face all swells up. If you have even, you know, a couple of your wisdom teeth removed, you look like a squirrel. In this case, right, these dentists, and there's probably 40 of them up there doing these clinical trials, and they turn them in, right? And they get government grant money because of the fact they're doing these trials. So it's a great thing for us, great thing for them, great thing for their patients. And so it's that gel. It's phenomenal. Its ability to help reduce inflammation and promote natural healing.
I love it. That's really great information. We've hit a wide range of potential uses for the gel. Lots of things to consider, a few that I had not considered myself. As we part ways here, Keith, I'll, of course, let you know that I'll be inviting you on again soon as any new developments come, especially if there's new approvals here in the U.S. But for those of you listening, it's important to I don't want to gloss over this either. This book that Keith is talking about, we'll have a link to it in the show description. You can link straight there. It is a free ebook, essentially, that you can download, you can read. It's fantastic. I've read it. I've used it. It's got some amazing information in there, and I highly suggest it for your use. It's everything you want to know, basically, about how to use silver for your health is in that book. And so we'll link to that for you. We'll link to the products so that you can see those at vitalitynutrition.com. And of course, you're welcome to come check us out at Vitality Nutrition in Bountiful, Utah as well. Keith, is there anything else you want to leave us with before we say goodbye?
I'd be pleased to do it again with you. It's always fun to hang out with you, Jared. We like working with you. I think it's great to work with smart people who are trying to help people. And that's our thing. Our motto is that we do well by doing good. And if we can do both those things together, you know that we have a winner, right?
Yep, I'm right there with you. And ditto to what you said. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your willingness to educate. And frankly, your willingness to get educated so that you do have this knowledge to share with us on this. I've never met anyone who knows silver inside and out the way that you do. So it's wonderful to have you on. We'll definitely do it again. And I think we'll be seeing each other here in half a week in Anaheim at the trade show. So looking forward to seeing you in person as well.
Have a great one. Be safe. We'll see you down there. Take care.
Excellent. And for everybody listening, remember, if you have questions, call us 801-292-6662 or jump online, vitalitynutrition.com. And don't forget to check the show description for the link to the book and everything else that we've talked about here on Vitality Radio. And if you like being involved in this effort to get more educated, to make better decisions for our health, look at the Facebook community, Vitality Radio Listeners Community. That link will be provided for you as well. Until next time, I'm Jared St. Clair, and this has been Vitality Radio.
You've been listening to the Vitality Radio Podcast. Enjoy your week. In the meantime, Jared will be feverishly searching for the latest nutrition info to educate you on and wading into mounds of propaganda to help steer you through it. Vitality Radio is researched and written by Jared St. Clair. Our awesome music is by Brian Bob Young. Support Vitality Radio by subscribing and giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or your favorite podcast source. Don't forget to follow us at Vitality Radio on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Please let us know your thoughts about this episode by using the hashtag Vitality Radio Podcast. And if you like what you hear, go tell somebody with a share, a screenshot, or an airdrop. Thank you.